Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. Time for our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster. Watch a change of tone.
Do you think St. Jerome would have translated the Bible with a laptop if he lived today?
Oh, absolutely, and propagated it, certainly.
So how do you say laptop?
Laptop, okay. What are you going to say? What are we going to say in our lapis in sinu? Eh? Computatrum de sinu. Out of your lap. Then, of course, you have Erasmus comes along and does much the same.
What do you mean, using a computer?
No, not a computer, but no, his knowledge of scripture. And he was never accepted by the church either, you know.
Well, that's a different period, though.
Well, I know that was the 15, okay, it was 1536 he died. But, I mean, he retranslated the whole New Testament. And he was telling people, friends, the New Testament that you have is not reliable. And they didn't like it. Like, Augustine didn't like, oh, you're ruining our faith and you're coming out with a new translation that we never heard before. Got the idea of the old traditionalists? Augustine and Jerome are very, very close. I mean, both extremely educated and way ahead of their times.
So who would have Erasmus preferred? Augustine or Jerome?
Oh, as far as scripture stuff, Jerome, there's no question about it. Although he has his own critical edition of some of the works of Augustine. Erasmus did, but no, he understood. He understood.
Do you think it's correct to say that there's no other person who has had greater influence on the way Catholics read the Bible than St. Jerome?
No, I wouldn't say that. His influence on Bible scholars is one thing, and his work for the text of the Bible is one thing, but the influence that Augustine has had is incalculable. I mean, all of our ideas and sin and hell and redemption and all this stuff is coming from Augustine. Not Jerome. Jerome did incredible services as far as Bible studies, but not as far as theology goes.
St. Augustine said of him, what Jerome is ignorant of, no mortal has ever known.
Ah, Augustine said that in one of these letters?
Mm.
I forget that.
I don't know. That's what I was told. How do you say Jerome in Latin?
Hieronymus.
Hieronymus.
I-E-I-H-I-E-R-O-A-N-Y-M-U-S. Hieronymus. Anyway.
The Latins didn't drop their H's.
No. And of course, they weren't as hard as we say. Hieronymus, almost.
Mm. How do you say drop your H's?
Aspirationes omitere.
That was easy. I thought I was going to get you there.
No, that's easy stuff. But,
he settled in Bethlehem.
Yeah.
No, where he lived in a cave believed to be in the birthplace of Christ. Is that so?
Living in a cave, he had more or less a monastery going with his friends there. Like, he had a house. I don't know whether he spent his whole life in a cave. I don't know where you got that from.
Okay, well, so tell me what Jerome did in a monastery there in Bethlehem.
Well, no, he had a whole group of scholars there, and the women from Rome came.
The women?
Certainly. Ooh, he had a whole group of people who were supporting him, rich matrons in Rome. Famous St. Paula, yeah. And came with her daughter, Eustochium.
So he had a woman...
Supporters, you know.
Fan club. How do you say
that? Yeah, fan club.
How do you say that in Latin?
Faltricum. Habebat manipulum faltricum. A little band of supporters. Yeah, certainly. And they had like almost a religious life going there, like a convent going. And when he was in the cave, he was not in the cave at that point.
He had a very bad temper, allegedly.
Oh, yeah. I
was going to say bad temper.
Yeah,
bad temper. Yeah. A bad tempered scholar.
Ingenii irascibilis.
Scholar?
Doctor. Doctor Ingenii Irascibilis. He kind of blew up all the time.
Well, these people, would you consider them provincial today in our globalized world?
What provincial? Who?
Jerome and Augustine.
Jerome wasn't. Augustine, I think, would be in a certain sense because he was very restricted, you know, to scripture and what he saw in the Bible. That was about it. And in the Roman Empire in North Africa. So he would be kind of, a little kind of more narrow-minded. Augustine would be. although his analysis of things is infinitely greater than Jerome's, got it? His view of the world, what how he looked and saw things is out of this world, how he thinks, bzzz, in his head. But, I mean, his experience is extremely limited. He was here in Milan, you know, here in North Africa, and Milan and Rome, and, you know, he never went, I don't think, well, he never went to Greece, or he never went around Europe, you know. And what he had as the source, especially the Bible and the fathers there before him. And
St. Ignatius, would he have read St. Jerome?
Oh, heaven's sakes, they knew everything. No, they were educated. I don't know about Ignatius, you know, they said he didn't know Latin. And he founded the, you know, the Jesuits. And then I think they said he had to go to Latin school to kind of brush up on his Latin because I guess he wasn't so good at it or something. As far as the Jesuit training goes, they knew everything. Mm.
So how would you say St. Ignatius had to brush up on his Latin?
Latinitas perficienda fuit. He had to finish off his Latin.
Now, you know, he was a soldier, no?
And all that, yeah, certainly, certainly. And so he didn't even have a chance, but he wanted his people trained. Matteo Ricci, you see the mostra? Matteo Ricci went to China and taught the Chinese mathematics and astronomy from Latin books.
What did the Chinese make of it?
They didn't understand, but he was using Latin books as a text, and from those Latin books was teaching them astronomy. And the Latin books were written here in Rome at the Collegio Romano. Famous stories. And so Latin is what transferred all this culture out to the Chinese. Not that they were doing the Latin, but Ricci and the Jesuits had Latin textbooks. That's all they had. And they would translate and share the knowledge and the content of Latin textbooks with the Chinese.
So it was a globalization ante litteram.
Yeah. Ante litteram, yeah.
What does ante litteram mean?
Before the letter, before the reading, before the... Okay.
And globalization we've translated lots of times.
Yeah, it's so awful. And you can't translate it because no one would be happy with anything we say. Yeah, globalizatio, which is spaghetti.
Spaghetti Latin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I would say, you know, you could do it, explain the word once and then use globalizatio. I don't care. Because people are just not going to be happy with anything you say. And you could say, for example, conformatio totius orbis. Okay, a conforming of the whole world. You could say it. The idea is there. But if you don't have a globalizatio, they're not going to be happy.
So we mentioned three people who wrote in Latin, St. Augustine, St. Jerome, and Ignatius. What I was getting at was St. Jerome, who would you have compared him to as a classical Latin author? His Latin, would it have been Ciceronian?
Well, they always say Ciceronian. Okay. Maybe Pliny, like Pliny. Quoted to Pliny. Yeah. Augustine would be closer to, I don't know what, maybe even Livy and some of his works on De Trinitate. Livy a little bit. They say, oh, Jerome's Latin is so classical. Well, yes, no.
What's the difference between Pliny's Latin and Livy's Latin?
Well, no, I mean, Pliny is much, much, much simpler. Livy is studied, like an eloquence and a style which is studied and worked over and worked over and worked over. That's Livy, you see. And whereas Pliny kind of, you know, just kind of wrote naturally, you see. And so Jerome would have written kind of naturally, where some other people would have studied it, maybe thought a little more. I don't know. It's very hard to...
And St. Ignatius is Latin.
Yeah, I haven't really read that much. The Jesuits could answer that.
A huge thank you there to our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite father, Reginald Foster, and he's currently working in the Vatican as the Pope's own Latinist. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.